Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray, and co-hosting with me tonight is Robert M. Robert and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those on Amazon, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Robert. How's it going?
It's going. You know, I decided to come share some of my potatoes with you guys, so here I am.
Well, I appreciate that. And so far, it's just me and you stirring up each other's potatoes. So, unfortunately, and I'm very thankful to have you here. Unfortunately, right now, Rex is sick, so he'll be missing a couple days or more. So we'll be sending out, you know, healing energy, prayers, good thoughts, whatever it is you believe in, you know, send it out for Rex, and we'll hope that he gets better as soon as possible.
Yeah. I'm not as cool of a cat as Rex, but I got a few hairballs of my own, so we'll see.
Well, none of us are as cool cats as Rex, so, you know, we can only dream. But no, it's going to be a great show. It'll be we got a great lineup of interesting poetry to discuss and delve into. We have a few carryovers, a couple from After Midnight, Philip Larkin, and then a few from Break On Through, the artwork of Adam Oler, and then we'll go into our main topic, which is the photography of Berenice Abbott, who was actually a very popular photographer in the 1930s and 40s particularly. I mean, she did other decades too because she lived a long life. But and she, a lot of her photography was black and white and was either portraits or she took a lot of pictures of big cities like New York, Chicago, those, you know, and so it's just really interesting stuff to me anyways. So, yeah. But, all right, well, I guess we can go ahead and get started. So. Oh, that doesn't do us much good. That's the show link. Let me actually grab a poem. All right.
I mean, we are poetry, so.
I would say I'm poetry in motion, but only if poetry in motion is somebody like, you know, falling over their own feet.
I'm poetry stationary.
Oh, man. Yep, there you go. I like that. All right. So up first, we have The Call of the Basket by Ima Rima. And Robert, would you go ahead, please, and give that a read for us?
Okay. The Call of the Basket. During a break from work each day, I eat an apple to the core. Supposed to be healthy, don't they say? That when I'm done, I try to score. The wastebasket across the room, I toss each core from practiced hand, and through the air the core does zoom in or out of basket to land. And now getting more in than out. One day I tossed, my boss walked in. She helped core and basket, no doubt, after first bouncing off her chin. In or out of the basket fall, maybe how happened basketball. In poem.
Great read, Robert, and a nicely written, like modern day sonnet from Ima Rima. Yeah, I like the imagery in this. I like how he had really a lot of fun with this. You know, it's a relatable, right? I think we've all played the, you know, basketball in the, you know, garbage in the trash basketball. And, you know, I like the humor in this, and I can imagine the embarrassment of the boss walking by and having the apple core bounce off of her chin. So definitely a smile-inducing write, and well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
I agree. I was quite prolific in Dumpster Ball. For a time, but that's about as close as I ever got to being good at basketball. Didn't help that I was like sitting 2 feet away, but whatever. This is very relatable. you know, when you ain't got nothing to do and there ain't no internet, you know, why not? Why not shoot a few cores across the room? But yeah, like you said, it was very, it was smile inducing, and it did have a great rhyme. And, the story it told was simple yet relatable, and I think it's really a good thing to me when a poem is relatable because it brings out the humanistic aspects that we all can share, and I think it did a great job with that.
Absolutely, absolutely, well said there. All right, and then our next carryover from After Midnight is The Whole is Greater Than the Sum of Its Parts by Eric Jensen. And Eric was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Full throttle, Aristotle, cast your eye on our modern day energy is pistol. Quantum theory I lay before your esteemed mind. May I equate planet Earth to a prism? all nations by sunrise interstellar light, all nations illumined by full moon face, light begets light, beatus est pisciculus, blessed be the little fish, quiet mind becomes a clear crystal, interstellar light refracts inner rainbows outwards, tarnished the sun may be. Case in point, currently South Africa's heart is in dire death throes. 29 years after democracy, bane of greed's corruption erodes all hope. Beatus est pisciculus, blessed be the little fish. Karmic harmonics observe. Karma is not punishment. Call it a fail-safe mechanism that keeps cohesive, universal energy intact. Big brother nations and little sister nations are under its searchlight. Full throttle Aristotle. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Modern day energy epistle softens harsh realities. Quantum theory brings about accountability. Because the spiderweb energy matrix was indented with greed, irony at its best, a once iconic, powerful, prosperous nation that engineered the first human heart transplant is now in dire death throes. Blessed be the little fish. Full throttle Aristotle. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts. Karmic harmonics quietly calibrate all nations hit by sunrise interstellar lights, all nations illumined by full moon face. Light begets light. Beatus est pisciculus. End poem.
Great read and write, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I'd also like to offer up an apology to Eric, because I actually missed his write in my contest last week, and so therefore didn't have it on my topic board. But we got it up this week, and I'm glad that we were able to do that. And Robert, your thoughts?
Well, Eric is always an enigma to listen to. Like, he's his vocabulary is very interesting, to say the least. Like, I like the word he used here, where is it illumined rather than illuminated, or illuminating or whatever. You know, illumined is very succinct and short, and I don't know why it captivated me, but it did. I don't think I've ever heard it before. I know what it meant as soon as I saw it, but it was interesting. Anyways, that's just a side note. The part that I liked, I think it was the third stanza, really shone out to me, because it was very, I mean, of course, he always has a touch of philosophy in his poetry, but where it says, "Blessed be little fish, karmic harmonics observe. Karma is not punishment. Call it a fail-safe mechanism that keeps cohesive universal energy intact." I thought that was very interesting, because it's how, like, before, when I mentioned death, like the Grim Reaper and whatnot, people think he's a bad guy when he's just an equalizer. And that same energy resonates here, is that, you know, karma is not necessarily punishment. It's that you get what you give. You know, and it's the balance. And I really, really thought that was just mind blowing, how how he put that in there in such a way, and so poetic and awesome in the way he can do. And it really jumped out at me. But you know, the entirety of the poem also, obviously I can't, you know, I'm not going to nitpick every line, but that really, it really resonated with me. So, you know.
Oh, definitely. And that really was a great observation there on that part, because yeah, it does speak to me also on the idea that, you know, that karma is a balancer, an equalizer. You know, he has such thoughtful and intelligent writes with, you know, as you were saying, creative word choices, you know, and to me, I see how this, you know, speaks on his homeland of South Africa, but I feel like it can speak on many nations and the world in general. You know, the imagery and metaphors is brilliant. I felt like in a part of this spoke to me, a theme of a society controlled by political greed, and the idea of searching for that light, searching for light in that kind of society. And I really like the part you mentioned, but I also like where he says, because the spiderweb energy matrix was indented with greed, irony at its best, and once iconic, powerful, prosperous nation that engineered the first human heart transplant is now in dire death throes. And then at the end, where he says, light begets light. You know, we, in order to find other people's light, we have to share our own. So excellent write and very well done. All right, and now we will move on to carryovers from the Adam Oehler's art. And we have up Out of Place by Bill Schiller. And Robert, please give that a read for us.
All right, Out of Place. There's an octopus in the forest. Tentacles like limbs hug trees. There's an octopus in the forest. Black ink spilled upon fallen leaves. There's an angel at bar in bowling alley. Sadly, local radio knows only Argentinian songs. Like the bull set loose in antique shop, nothing is where it belongs. Since the octopus crawled the forest, too much feels too wrong. By act of Poseidon, by sheer nautical whim, the octopus has found the forest. Should I expect squid to come next behind him? End poem.
Great read, Robert. This is a fun write by Bill, and it stands well on its own, but I think it also helps if you see the artwork that goes with, that he wrote to, which is a surrealism type painting, where it's a picture of an painting of an octopus, a giant octopus in the middle of a forest. And so I like that he kind of gives an answer to the painting, like, you know, well, what's going to happen next? I really like the humor, and there's an angel at bar in bowling alley. Sadly, local radio knows only Argentinian songs. And then the end with the question, should I expect squid to come next behind him? Clever write and very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, I saw that that octopus painting, and I thought it was very interesting. Because it, you know, brings to mind, like, what the hell is he doing there? But he did well in expressing that prompt and also delivering the question that I'm sure most of us had if we were to see that picture. But I also like his inclusion of the bull in the shop. Is that what it says? Like the bull set loose in antique shop, nothing is where it belongs. You know, so almost everyone has heard of that little thing is like a bull in the china shop. You know, that's like, for example, speaking of how clumsy a person is or whatnot. So I think that added a little bit to the humor in itself. And then where he says, by act of Poseidon, by sheer nautical whim, the octopus has found the forest. You know, like the octopus himself is just like super stubborn. And he's like, you ain't going to tell me where I'm going to go. And ends up in the damn forest, you know. I think that's really a smile worthy piece, and it did make me smile, which is, you know, doesn't happen often. So thank you for that, Bill.
Absolutely, yeah. I like that you pointed out that part, and also the bull set loose in an antique shop. I remember years ago, I went into this shop at a mall and they sold vases, and not like cheap vases. Like, we're talking like I think the cheapest was like 100 and the most expensive was like 10,000 or something ridiculous like that. And I just wanted to just stand still and not move for fear I would knock something over.
Yeah. I would feel just like the title of this poem, out of place. I would not want to be there.
That's me in an expensive shop of vases, out of place, definitely. But yes, great write by Bill. I always appreciate him. All right, and back to late night poets. All right. Up next, we have hand-painted muck and mire versus conspired desire required by liquid mind forever. And it goes like this. Are we primitive captives sometimes circumambulating a miswired brain system, looking out inside some chamber of catacombs held in of or by captivity, unnatural proclivity? Or are we only particles of detritus, fantastical imagination programmed by a brain that is flawed and faulty, below ground, above ground, a mosaic, prosaic, aphrodisiac, an excuse, however obtuse or abusive the fused ruse on cues? As we swim like guppies or minnows in a school of polluted, convoluted pools who rules, can we win at any or all of these convoluted lame games operated by shame and blame? To name the mainframe too, who circle in cesspools of fools seeking other ghouls to tool around with us in spools of Alice in Wonderland dreamscapes? Is there any meaning in careening down rabbit holes, living like moles with made-up goals without which tolls are levied, a bevy of misappropriated scams to gum and jam, the mastications of out-of-sync calibrations, programmed imbeciles who think they think, but who have never had one actual thought, caught like goldfish in the reeds and cattails, derailed, blackmailed, assailed, jailed by beliefs, downloaded from birth, domesticated sheep asleep, keeping tabs as we slab down another purloin for sore line. Feverishly we circle, chasing ourselves into frantic feeding frenzies. Has been piranhas with beady, vicine eyes, trying to proselytize. While memorized, as we agendize, we wise, how wise we are. How far have we come on the plumb line, trying to wallpaper stone cold cinder block, prefabricated with rolled gold mold? How many folds have wrapped us, zapped us, collapsed us into fleshing AIs? Is there some mean thing, dynasty's bling ring, rhinestone cowboy, I Ching, who authenticates the ring masturbator, the Zoroastrian domesticator, pre-pharasicator, who justifies slave, nay, cave laborers? Is peace the proverbial holy grail used to assail as we fail railing, emailing, zombified techno geeks, freaks who seek some meaning. The wise old owl turns as the sly red fox just sits, his back turned, eyes focused forward, choosing his prey day after day as we pay megabucks to allay the foray of dying. End poem. And I gave this one the gold because I really like the inner and end rhyme, the way she plays with imagery, metaphors, you know, and even the way she chooses to kind of shift her stanzas and then has the word dying, you know, hanging off at the end as if it's a representation of like dropping off at the end of life. I really thought this had amazing imagery and metaphors. And the main thought that it gave to me was the idea of the games that people play in the name of status, you know, to elevate their status and also to avoid death. I like the mention of Zapdos collapsed us into fleshing AI, the artificial intelligence, the idea of that we basically have become, machines. I like how it speaks also on the idea to me of how, you know, there's kind of this a false idea about what intelligence is. You know, intelligence is thinking for yourself. It isn't, you know, deciding, you know, who's the right person to follow necessarily, because either way, no matter who you choose to follow, you're still following someone. I really liked where she also says, caught like goldfish in the reeds and cattails and domesticated sheep asleep, keeping tabs as we slab down another pork loin, purloin for sirloin. You know, a wonderful imagery there that really speaks on the idea of while we are destroying somebody, somebody else is dreaming about destroying us. Just an intriguing and thought-provoking write and very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
I didn't know that you could get that stone ceiling from reading poetry, but I was feeling it listening to all these awesome words. I was just like, whoa, as my eyes closed my eyes to listen. And, it was, this is probably one of my favorite pieces from her because it touches on a lot of points that are plaguing us nowadays. Like, for example, people becoming robots or autonomous, you know, like just no, everybody just wakes up and goes to routine. There's no originality. There's no spontaneity. There's nothing. We live to work and then we die. And that kind of basically, to me, that's what it seemed like in this. And also that we give the people that are, who we see as above us for some reason, like they're just people themselves, but we elevate other people and allow them to get away with so much and cause so much injustice there's so much wrongdoing in the world because we allow it, you know, and I like how she touched on that. And also the part that you pointed out was my favorite part in the, where she says, let's see, if I could find it again. Programmed imbeciles who think they think, but who have never had one actual thought. You know, I thought that was a very interesting way to put that. And it's true. Everybody thinks that they're original. Everybody thinks that they're unique. And certainly there are, you know, in some ways we are unique, but people don't want to be unique. They want to be like everybody else. And everybody else thinks that they're unique. So it's a weird paradigm. It's a strange cycle. And she basically did a good job in addressing many points of society nowadays. And I think it was very impressive the way that she did it. It was very brutal and yet very clever at the same time.
Absolutely. Brutal and clever were great words to describe this, right? And I like that you bring up the thought of how oftentimes, you know, people who are in higher powers, we elevate them and then we let them get away with things that they shouldn't be getting away with. So great comment there. All right. And I'll go ahead and grab the next right. And all right. Up next, we have Following That Dream by S. Sharp. And let me check, because I can't remember if this had a SoundCloud. No, it did not. So go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
Okay. Following That Dream. Wading through the tar, a muddied stream, along sidewalks in New York City, trees push up their own roots from the acidity of depression, throwing down golden leaves, seemingly mulched immediately by people walking and talking politics. Anticipating the worst, darkness runs in the gutters amidst the cigarette butts and candy wrappers. I think of the days in my rural little hometown, anywhere but here, USA. When rains came, I would make boats out of anything, sticks, paper, cardboard, even cigarette butts. Sail ships down the long, winding Mississippi, enjoying the journey with nary a care. Take it as long as she was floating. But that was back in the days. A gutter was a good thing. End poem.
Great read, Robert, and a wonderful write by S. Sharp by Scott. I always enjoy and appreciate his poetry. There's a thoughtfulness to it. This has a nostalgia to it, but it's kind of a nostalgia that can go either way. You know, like it can be the idea that times were better because we didn't, you know, necessarily over-worry or overthink about things. But that could have also made these times better because we're more aware. You know, like you always see, like, you know, people will say, like, have memes or whatever that say things like, you know, when I was a kid, we always, you know, didn't ride with a seatbelt and I'm fine. It's like, okay, but obviously there were people who did die from not wearing seatbelts, or, you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting, but it speaks to me, like, it's a wonderful imagery, great extended metaphor, and it speaks to me on changing times, and I think it can be open to interpretation on whether those changes are a good thing or not. I do feel like it also speaks on the idea of how the world is becoming filled with pollution and with people who are basically avoiding each other. And then I think a lot of that has to do with technology. I mean, as much as technology is a good thing, it also gives us more of an opportunity to avoid each other. And I really find that when it comes to ending lines, Scott always has some of the most intriguing ones. You know, and this one is no exception when he says, but that was back in the days, a gutter was a good thing. So great write and very well done. And Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I like that you touched on the pollution because there's more than one type of pollution here. There's at least three, I believe, and that's political pollution, technological pollution, and just pollution in general. And you know, he did great in expressing, like I said, another humanistic piece, very relatable. Like, you look around and there's nothing but garbage everywhere in many shapes and forms, you know, whether it be people, whether it be ideals or would be ideals, you know, like when he says, anticipating the worst, darkness runs in the gutters amidst the cigarette butts and candy wrappers, you know, it's just all over the place. It's just everywhere in the deepest recesses of our, of our cities and in ourselves, you know. So I really think he did a great job in expressing that. And also, too, it, like the whole, oh, back in my day, you know, yada, yada, yada. It's it's interesting because we all become that. Like, we all do that. Like, oh, well, I remember back when. I remember back when. And then, you know, like, the kids are like, yeah, yeah, whatever. And then later on, the kid says the same thing. Oh, I remember. So that's another thing that's just really captivating about this, in that it brings out that, and it shows that part, exposes that part of us, our hypocrisy based on nuance, you know. And so, yeah, I think, you know, just being kind and in general can help clean up a lot of that pollution, but that does not seem like it's going to be very feasible in this day and age. Things have to change, and he really did a good job in presenting these flaws that we have and providing nuance and nostalgia. So he did an excellent job with this.
He really did, yes. And yeah, it is funny because we do. Every generation does do that. So, and I like that you observed, and I have to agree that there is mentioned in this poem the idea of different types of pollution. So great observations there. All right, let's see what we got next. All right, up next we have "Can a Firefly Corral a Star?" by Freya. And it goes like this. Rolling across a maple-flavored Milky Way galaxy, I question the origins of light. With each ore dipped bioluminescent pearls, bead waters surface, field of stars young and old. I have read it is electrons falling from grace that emit photons from orbits of high energy states. Can a firefly corral a star? A delicate touch speaking life-giving poetry delivered to their beloved? How can everything be given substance and life through such disorganized, omnipresent emissions? All things fall faster, parachuting infinitely the liminal threshold on a scale bigger than all the books piled up together from all the worlds written as biographies, electrons cascade, valences of the lovelorn, saved in that repurposed bottle of spirit dreams, traveling among light sails and turbulent seas. Oh, Andromeda, your magnetic midnight skin of sky and stars, constellated as you are with Pegasus, musty library shelter, book-bound leaves, poet-stitched fig leaves, protect innocence from falling in love with filaments of your man of war. But of course, we still fail you, princess of Ethiopia. Though monsters try to take your beauty daily, they can never sever your strong bond to square rigged feathers. My child, the flying horse, it is you who lives among the immortals and us who pine in the mystery of your overcoming nature. It is us who wish to bear your offspring. Though our ugliness, the killing frost, we spring melt your speaking voice, singing at dragons. Fairy dust from your eyelids dots our cheeks like gold in the great river. Given a chance, I know you could love me. My locks were never really snakes. I have paid for the sins of the fathers. While he paints in the south of France, love transcends the crucifix of the giant swan, Cygnus. We lay together, saddened, grieving. For a long moment, the cataracts of Lake Victoria sparkle, though never once have we fallen from grace. End poem. And, Freya is one of my favorites, and she was inspired by multiple prompts in this contest, which I think is always really cool when people do that. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, whoa, 1, 3, 5, 6, 7, 9, 11, 12, 17. I was like, whoa, she was really inspired, which is good. Yeah, that's what we aim for. We want people to be inspired because then they give us awesome rights like this. As you know, I'm kind of a star 11 person in space and all that stuff is very interesting to me. And strewn throughout this entire poem was little tidbits of that. And, you know, I really enjoyed her description. Where is this? Oh, Andromeda, your magnetic midnight skin of sky and stars, constellated as you are with Pegasus. You know, the calling her skin midnight skin of sky and stars, I thought that was like beautiful. And I thought that was a very interesting way of thinking of it, because when I heard that part, I immediately started picturing like in the sky, like a giant, you know, goddess like made out of space dust and stars. And I don't know, it was very cool imagery that just popped in my head. And then Pegasus 2 top of that, it was awe-inspiring, and it was also poetically inspiring. Like, it kind of makes you this is one of those poems when you read it, it kind of gives you like fuel for yourself to go write, because a lot of things popped in my head like as I was listening to her poem. And I was like, wow, that's a very cool concept. Or, oh, I didn't think of it that way. Like this part, though our ugliness, a killing frost, we spring melt, your speaking voice singing at dragons. I thought that was awesome. And then fairy dust from your eyelids dots our cheeks like gold in the great river. You know, I thought that was excellent as well. So, yeah, this is just beautiful all around and all throughout. And when she says my locks were never really snakes, made me think of Medusa. So, this is awesome. It had a lot of space references, and it also had mythological references as well, which are two of my favorite things. So very well done.
Oh, absolutely. I, too, really like the mythological references. A great comment there. Yeah, I like that she brings in Andromeda and Medusa. The story of Medusa, like the full story, is always really interesting to me, you know, because they really make her out to be, seem like to be the bad guy. But really, it was like, you know, I mean, she was raped, you know, and, you know, she just, really, like, not everything that happened was her fault, but it seems like a lot of times mythologies and religions will oftentimes do this in a way where, you know, the victim becomes, and I'm not saying she was completely innocent, and obviously I also keep in mind that it was mythology, but, you know, and oftentimes you think of Medusa, you think of somebody who was always evil, but she wasn't always evil. She was just got, you know, in a series of events that wasn't completely all her fault. You know, I love the imagery and metaphors in this. I love the way that the poem flows. And I, too, you know, I have to agree with you. Freya is always very inspiring. And I like how this speaks on the idea of you know, I feel like there's this extended metaphor, these metaphors on the idea of how light is created when we're reaching for the stars, and the stars being metaphorical, and the idea when we reach for love, when we reach for hope or dreams, that light inside of us starts to shine. You know, powerful lines all the way through, and very well done.
Yeah, what you said also reminded me, like, because it's been through history that a lot of times women have been to blame for many things. And, like, when you think about the Bible and Adam and Eve, and it's like, oh, it's Eve's fault and this and that. It's like, you could have just been like, nah, bro, I'm not going to eat that apple. Thanks. So, you know, just, you know. just, you know, move on, you know, let her eat the apple she wants. Even if it was even her idea, who knows? Maybe it was his idea, because men are stubborn like that too. And be like, hey, nobody don't tell me what to do. And then, you know. So anyways, I don't know. I just thought it was very interesting that, you know, you brought that up. But, you know.
Yeah, that is so true. It actually kind of reminds me of this little joke that says, you know, why did the serpent have, you know, Eve offer the apple to Adam? Because no woman in her right mind would have taken fruit from a naked man. All right, let's see. What do we have next? All right. And, oh, here we go. I'm going to put up another one by Ima Rima, which I really appreciate his support. And the reason we have another one from him is because he actually had two carryovers from two different contests. So a shout out to him for being patient and for his support of the shows. And so we have Matter of Perspective by Ima Rima. And go ahead, Robert, and give it a read for us, please.
Matter of Perspective. Through the woods I did walk one day, and I came to a quiet, quite lovely spot. Upon the grass a deer did lay, from the perspective I first got. It was a mighty stag laying there, with large multi-forked antlers that reached very high into the air, blended in forest habitat. Then I could not believe my eyes. Upon the antlers leaves did sprout. But moments later, no surprise, I shifted some, there was no doubt. Tree limbs did make it look as though leafed antlers did grow from the doe. End poem.
Great read, Robert. And another wonderful, what is it? Oh, yeah, sonnet. Sonnet. That seems to be Ima's favorite form. Is a sonnet, and he wrote to a he likes to choose the fun and interesting pictures. He wrote to a picture of a deer, and the forest is basically the trees. The forest are growing out of the deer's antlers, and it's a very mythological rite, which makes sense given the prompt. But I like how it also speaks on a reality of life, which is oftentimes. As we get closer to a situation, it changes our perspective. Like, I felt like this worked well for being an amusing poem, but it also worked well for being an extended metaphor on the idea that we really can't judge a situation until we step closer to it and see it more clearly. So excellent, right, and very well done. And Robert, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it brings to light that one statement says you can't see the forest from the trees, you know. So you got to get down in there. But yeah, I thought this was great. And again, great rhyming, as you said, it's a sonnet. So I'm still not familiar with all the poetic devices, like what they're referred to as, but I kind of understand them when I see them. So yeah, he did a great job of doing that in the last poem and in this poem. And I like the representation of the deer with the antlers and the leaves growing out. It reminds me of, because I play a bunch of different games, and a lot, and in those games there's what they call druids, and druids tend to be shapeshifters, you know, and a lot of times they're in tune with the forest, obviously, and sometimes they have that. Sometimes they have, like, you know, when you shapeshift into this deer, there's like leaves growing out of their ears or their antlers or, you know, wherever. And this is really like a fantastical image, like when you think about it. And, you know, the prompt, he did a prompt justice, and he also did a great job in conveying like that to us. So I'm glad that he decided to write for it. He seems to have a knack for getting people to see what he wants them to see. So, great poem.
Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment. All right, and that was the last of our carryovers. So now we go into Rites inspired by the photography of Bernice Abbott. And we have a first of two minds by Darkened Auras. I'm of two minds, one dark, one light. One sees the love, one sees the fight. I wear a mask, my thin disguise, so that no one will realize. I could be the bringer of your dreams, or I could be the maker of your screams. I'm of two minds, one void, one bright, devoid of will to make it right. Compassion, sure, it's sometimes there, but most human beings don't seem to care. So my body does what bodies do, eat, sleep, get screwed by others, and sometimes screw. Not in a sexual way, mind you. I'm of two minds, seems you are too. End poem. Oh man, that was such a fun ending. That was just clever. And Robert, your thoughts?
Well, as you may remember, I'm an avid, a person who really enjoys duality. And I like when the poem goes from left to right, or right to left, whichever, back and forth. And this was really well composed, and the structure was great. The rhyme was not any forced rhyme at all to me, and which is good. And I too was cracking up at that ending. So my body does what bodies do, eat, sleep, get screwed by others, and sometimes screw. It's like, not in a sexual way, mind you. I'm of two minds, and it seems you are too. So it's like pointing out, I wouldn't necessarily say the faults of someone, but pointing out that they're aware of the nature of people. So they know that, you know, hey, you're probably thinking this, but this is actually what I meant. And then the author's note makes it more funny. So yeah, I really love the first few stanzas. Like, I'm of two minds, one dark, one light. One sees the love, one sees the fight. I wear a mask, my thin disguise, so that no one will realize. I could be the bringer of your dreams, or I could be the maker of your screams. And this rings true with a lot of people and in a lot of circumstances, because not everyone is who they appear to be at first. And sometimes you think it's the person of your dreams when it's just the person of your screams. So I can really understand that one. Did a great job. This is a great poem. I really liked it. Thanks for that, Darkened Auras.
Absolutely. I'm glad she was inspired. And yes, I too like the duality that she speaks of in this, right? It was a great takeoff of the chosen prompt. And I think, you know, rites that speak on that kind of duality are more realistic. I mean, it's part of the reason I like, although I don't get to join them often because usually on Fridays I'm tired, I like the show Part Sinner, Part Saint, because a lot of the topics they choose, you know, and the show itself has to do with the fact that we all have that light and that darkness in us. You know, there's always that sense of balance. And sometimes the balance is out of whack, but, you know, that happens. I did like her AN where she mentions that she didn't mean this to be funny, but you know what? That's what happens. Sometimes poems just go their own way. And with this one, I'm really glad they did. And I was smiling because, you know, it's not only pointing out how people usually think, but kind of poking a little bit of fun at the reader too, like, ha, I know what a pervert you are. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
There you go. That takes one to know one type of thing.
Yeah, right. Very true. Very true. All right, and up next we have Changing New York by Sam Sampson. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read.
changing New York. Upper West Side, all show and glitz. A New York night, near bright as day. New processes, paper base, Barita layer, gelatin coating to catch the light. Trial and error, exposure times. Push the blacks, bring out the whites. A changing world to document. Out with the old, in with the tall, and high and mighty dreams of a new age. End poem.
Great read, Robert. This is a wonderful write. I mean, it's amazing how much to me, within a brevity, he fits this layeredness. You know, like he speaks on another one that speaks on changing times, but this one touches on, to me, the prejudice of past, and not that prejudice still doesn't exist, but, you know, where he says, push the blacks, bring out the whites, you know, and that, of course, can speak on newspaper, I think, and how newspaper is a popular form of communication. But I think it also works on the idea of people of different colors, how, and on segregation, at least, and I could be misreading this, but I feel like it does make me think of the idea, that line of segregation. But it also makes me think of newspaper printing and, you know, how that was, you know, you'd have the young men, you know, passing out the newspapers, shouting the headlines of the day. I also like gelatin coating to catch the light, and the end lines, and high and mighty dreams of a new age. You know, I think the high and mighty dreams of a new age kind of speaks to me anyways on the idea of how we grow bigger and better, you know, with the technology and with buildings, but, you know, we become so high and mighty, we start to look down on those that we shouldn't. So, excellent write and very well done. And Robert, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Well, I first of all, like the you did the prompt justice, like the picture that's there, the black and white, you know, New York City type thing, and yeah, like it did mention of like the old times, you know, like newspapers were the up and coming thing, and it was like very hot technology back in the days, and you know, back then people were very, how you say, driven to aspire to greatness. You know, they always wanted to do something better, something new, something great. And they, you know, I want to build a building this tall. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to build a building taller than that, you know. And each time that competition kind of drove us, you know, for a while. And the thing about it is it kind of reminds me of the story of the Tower of Babel when, you know, they were building a tower so high to try to reach God, you know. And then, you know, God was like, what the heck y'all doing? Just smacked it down and like, don't do that no more, you know, because it's kind of like a lesson in humility in that the higher you build something, the harder it's going to crash down. And it seems as though we've peaked in a way because, you know, if you look at society nowadays, like, it seems like everything is just stagnant, you know. Like, yeah, we got computers, we got phones that can do whatever. But as a species, like, as humans, we're just stagnant. And this kind of really brings out the point of the old times and how great we wished we could be. And then what we ended up being now. So I could be wrong. Like, maybe people think that we're not, but I think that the tower has fallen and we have to kind of pick up the pieces and regain our humanity again and try to progress and do better. And this really inspired me. Like, this was a brevity, but it had a lot in there, you know, and I really appreciated it. So thanks for that, Sam Sampson. It was a great poem.
Absolutely. Yeah, it did offer up a lot of food for thought. And I like how you chose to use the word stagnant to describe where we're at, because I can agree with that. And it's also intriguing to me as I was listening to you comment how things have changed. Like, you know, as you were mentioning, it used to be that we wanted to build things bigger and taller. And now it seems like, you know, what we want to do is build things smaller. Like, we keep getting smaller and smaller phones and computers. And, definitely interesting how perspectives and times change. Comment.
That's what they say. What's old is new again, I guess. I don't know.
Yep. I'm still waiting for the, what is it, neon clothes and, you know, tall bangs of the 1980s to come back.
I want some jetpack shoes. That'd be kind of cool.
rocket
boots. But I wouldn't mind the prices going back to the way they were in the 1930s. That'd be kind of good.
That would be nice, especially gas. Now, not that I don't drive, but I mean, for people who have to give me rides, I'd like them to have cheap gas. So, all right. Well, up next, we have one of my favorite humor poets. I always enjoy reading his work and seeing him. And that is Yiddish Cribbage by Paul Brott. And it goes like this. Rabbi walked in and caught Saul playing solitaire. Do you mind if I join you? Saul prayed he'd disappear. You know, games of chance when played on the Sabbath have oft times been told to stir God's wrath. But Rabbi, dear Rabbi, solitaire has only one winner and same loser. One shouldn't cast stones or play the accuser. So if you're a winner, you're not judged a sinner? Oh, that makes sense. Go ahead then, deal me in. But then it's not solitaire. What are you afraid? You won't win? End poem. Oh, that was funny. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, I always, this brought to mind the questions I had as a kid. It was like, when I used to see people playing solitaire, and then I even came across it on the computer, and I didn't understand it. And I was like, why are people playing games by themselves? You know, and I never understood it. And it kind of took me back to that time, because it was very philosophical, and it seems as though the person in the poem is genuinely like, hey, do you mind if I join you? You know, they really want to play, but he's like, no, we can't. You can't. It's only one player game. But then later on, he says, oh, that makes sense. Go ahead then. Deal me in. He still isn't getting it. And he's like, but then it's not solitaire. You know, I don't know. I thought this was a very, it was very funny, but it's also wholesome, I guess. You know, like a very wholesome poem with humor strewn throughout, obviously. And you can't help but smile. And I enjoy that when you don't really have a choice but to smile. And you did that for us. So thank you for that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I like the humor in this, and I like that it's the humor that, to me, speaks on the idea of trying to find loopholes through laws and rules. I don't remember the exact number. My aunt would know, because my mom and her sisters grew up Jewish, and my one aunt is still practicing the Jewish faith. And she could tell you how many laws are in the Old Testament. I don't remember the exact number. I just remember it's a lot. So I like that this is a humor. It's humorous, but it speaks on the idea of how oftentimes we try to find those loopholes. Like to me, the rabbi, you know, speaking on the idea that, you know, gambling is a sin, you know, and but then, well, you know, I'm not gambling because I'm only playing with myself, and, you know, and it's like, oh, well, and deal me in. So, yeah, I like the ditziness at the end, almost like, you know, it's like a blonde and a rabbi walked into a bar. I don't know. It just gave me that thought.
Well, you know, even if you're playing with yourself, that's also considered a sin. So.
So I hear, but I try to ignore that one. All right. Well, let's see what we have next. We have A Dirty Rat's Demise by Daniel Duhaime. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us.
All right. A Dirty Rat's Demise. The dirty rat gave us up to the feds. Now we have Alvin Karpis tracking us down. Big Al put a hit out on him. He's lower than a sewer rat. He broke the mafia code of Amartya. Now he's going to be swimming with the fishes in cement shoes. No fed can keep watch on him all the time. That's when we will go pay him a visit. First, we will use pliers to pull out his fingernails, then cut off out his tongue for being a snitch and shove it down his throat. He will also have both ears cut off just for jollies. The outfit needs its revenge, and me and my crew are hired to do the task, showing no mercy to this punk. We have a room in an abandoned building ready for our task, about 2 8-gallon pails to put his feet in and encase it in cement before dropping him like an anchor into the bay. They will never find the body. End poem.
Great read there, Robert. I was just looking up Al Karpis, and apparently there was an Alvin Francis, the last name was something like Karpivicus, who they called Alvin Karpis, and he was actually a Canadian-born gangster from the 1930s. I don't know why, but for some reason, because you always hear the rumors about like how nice Canadians are, I never think of them as having like, you know, gangsters in any
right.
time period, you know, but
probably
brother. Yeah, right. Yeah. Daniel Duhaime probably comes from a long line of Canadian gangsters. So in Ontario. And, I like how he tells a story and only, like, not a whole lot of lines. It's got that epic feel to it. It definitely has that 1930s, 1940s vibe to it. It really got dark in some of the parts. Like, I think he's definitely watched quite a bit of movies or read books or, you know, did his research. I think to me, the darkest part was then cut out his tongue for being a snitch and shove it down his throat. He will also have both ears cut off just for jollies. You know, it's like up until that point, as dark as it was, there was a purpose until it came to cutting off the ears just for the fun of it. So great, epic dark write and very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, I can appreciate this because it goes into we go from laughing about, you know, rabbis playing solitaire and then jump right into this. It's a huge contrast, but both just, you know, are parts of humanity. One is a way darker part. This one getting jollies from being sadistic rather than, you know, just playing cards. But like you can picture the scene like in your head, and then you know, naming names like Alvin Karpis, you know, it kind of gives more of a strength to the piece because you have like a figurehead, you have like a character that or a protagonist even. Or antagonist, that you know, you could kind of put all of this on, like, this is what the story is about, you know. And so I like that. And it was like a decent story, like as you went on, it escalated and escalated to the point to where it was just beyond torture. It was, I mean, beyond means. It was just for fun, you know, torture for fun. And then like I said, that's also the other part of the opposite side of humanity. And we are a very diverse group of people. And I can say that just these two poems alone can show our very, very stark differences in one way and the other. But as this piece itself, like not a comparison with the other, we've seen movies, you know, we've seen like mobster movies and things like that. And a lot of times things are over embellished. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're actually worse in real life than they are in the movie. But this kind of like captures the essence of that. Like it captures what the nitty gritty, the basics, and it takes you for the ride and then leaves you sleeping with the fishes. So, yeah, well done.
Absolutely. And you're right. We do have so many different poets of different personalities that really come through when you see people's different takes on prompts. And these last two were, as you said, a great example of that. By the way, before we move on to the next write, I would like to point out that in his AN, that Daniel mentions that this will air on his birthday. So happy birthday, Daniel.
Happy birthday.
Yes, we would sing for you, but that would be more like a birthday punishment rather than a birthday gift. So.
So our gift is not singing.
Yeah, right. Just saying it. Yep. So happy birthday and have a wonderful day. All right. So let's see what kind of vibe our next poem will bring up. Well, it will be Liquid Mind Forever. So I'm sure whatever vibe it brings up, it will be most intriguing. All right. This is Towering Insanity, a game of profanity versus calamity. Spires require self-realized desire, require leniency, not ire. Brick, mortar, steel, congeal. What appeal to conceal or feel the real? Behind the lens, f-stopped, I can drop a curtain of uncertain, procure and obscure, demure from immature. To marry the object of attention, we ferry cross the mercy, adversity captured with an aperture of 400 or more. How high the moon is it attuned or lunar eclipse, which whips or drips sips of controversy, not knowing if I'm vanilla or chocolate, provides a wide landscape to drape and escape on the nape of homosexuality, casuality versus actuality, seeking invalidity, tough and gritty, the old bitty, now too snitty, to appreciate this dumb witty bit of a skit and poem. And Robert, your thoughts?
Well, she does really have a way with rhyme. I can really give her that. The part that, like the whole poem, I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. But then when it got to the end, it kind of made me chuckle a little bit because it says, yeah, not knowing if I'm vanilla or chocolate provides a wide landscape to drape and escape the nape of homosexuality, casuality versus actuality, seek it in validity, tough and gritty, the old bitty now too snitty to appreciate this dumb witty bit of a skit. You know, I was like, whoa, it kind of threw me for a loop there. And then it just made me laugh. I don't know. Because whenever I hear tough and gritty, old bitty, it reminds me of my grandma. And if you guys were to know her, man, you wouldn't stop laughing at all the stuff she used to pull. But in any case, it's not about that. This poem, like, I found it interesting. And like in the second part where it says brick, mortar, steel, congeal, what appeals to conceal or feel the real? Like, she, her lines are usually, from what I've seen, a bit longer, but she decided to shorten it up on that part, and I'm wondering why. But then she goes, behind the lens, f-stopped, I can drop a curtain of uncertain, pure and obscure, demure from immature. And I'm sure that we all can relate to that in a way, because we all have our own curtain, so to speak, and what lay behind them is only for privileged eyes. And I don't know, I think she had a great way of actually describing that, you know, the secrets we keep about ourselves. And I don't know, I thought that the third stanza was probably my favorite, but the last one really made me chuckle.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree, that last one made me chuckle. And, you know, sometime when we're not doing a poetry show, I definitely want to hear some, you know, Grandma M stories. Although I don't know if she's actually Grandma M, but, you know. I definitely want to hear some of those stories. And I'll tell you about my crazy grandmothers, too. So both of mine were characters. But, so great write, great comment there. And wonderful write by Liquid Mind Forever. You know, I like that, actually, I feel like, and definitely great smile-inducing lines at the end with the use of the dumb witty, too dumb witty to appreciate this bit of a skit. I feel like this is actually... in part, a tribute to the photographer herself, because it uses, you know, like f-stop is a type of camera phrasing that has to do with photography, you know, so is 400, you know, and I feel like because this particular photographer was one of the first women photographers to really go out in the area of, you know, like going up high and going into big cities. You know, she was a strong feminist figure, not only in how she chose to do her work, but what she chose to stand up for. And so I feel like that in part, this is a tribute to the photographer herself and to the people and the places that she brought attention to. So excellent write and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right. I'm going to check this one poem because I think it needs a reader. Let's see here. I'm just trying to decide which one to grab next. All right.
That's what he said.
You're just on a roll tonight.
Yeah, well, deciding which roll to grab, I guess.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
I need something to go with my potatoes, man.
I think something more than potatoes is getting stirred.
Oh, well. Well, then.
All right. Well, up next we have Through the Lens by Eric Svensson. And Robert, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
All right. Through the lens. Eyes wide open, dizzying dance, thrill of vertigo, falcon eyes view, cityscape, pan out below, stucco stepped, apartments, blocks, zany ziggurats, reach clouds to such dome stars. Back in the dark room, silver chloride and silver bromide set to work, swivel, swerve. Well-timed light infraction actualizes. Will what keen eyes beheld manifest? Spontaneous composition thrills. camera viewer condenses, make the wondrous wide world containable, propelled by excitement. Photographers love to share, like a fine musical composition, each perfect shot energizes. Dark room, dungeon, secret lair, inner sanctum, holy ground. Experienced hands, braille, pregnant film roll. Baby inserted creativity, dolphins in liquid. Will what keen eyes beheld manifest? Creative spellcasters at best, uncanny instinct, pivotal split seconds, shoots a masterpiece. Ever-present light reflects or deflects. Eye detection seeks longevity. Through the lens, scouted moments immortalized. Future generations can travel back in time. Behold the alchemy of silver chloride and silver bromide. Breathe in the bookbinder, climbs that were gentler, when creative patience was still a virtue. End poem.
Great read, Robert. You know, I really like this. And this is another one that, although I don't think it's necessarily a tribute to the particular photographer, but to the art form of photography and to particularly the history of photography. And for those that don't know, Eric himself is actually a wonderful photographer. And in fact, for this coming Tuesday show, Naomi is running a contest where some of the prompts are some of her artwork and some of Eric's photographs. This is actually, I like to challenge, when it comes to prompts, every once in a while I like to challenge myself to put up a prompt that makes me nervous or queasy. Like most people, when they say they're afraid of heights, mean like if they actually have to climb or stand. I can look like at a picture like this and actually get, like right now, I am actually nauseous looking at this picture, and that's how much I really despise heights. But I like to challenge myself to put stuff like that up just to, you know, make myself face it in some small way. Now, am I ever going to necessarily go mountain climbing? No, you're never going to get me to face my fear that way. But I'm willing to put up a picture. And as always, Eric plays very well with imagery, metaphors, and alliteration. I like how it is really all about the photography and the art form of it. My maternal grandmother, was a very artistic, and she actually did photography, and she had in her house a dark room, and I really like dark room, dungeon, secret lair, inner sanctum, holy ground, experienced hands, braille, pregnant film roll, baby insert, creativity, dolphins in liquid, will what keen eyes beheld manifest, and that is like a perfect description of what goes on in order to reveal the photography within the dark room. So wonderful lines and very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, you can tell throughout the poem that he has like a deep understanding of the topic. So when you mentioned that, you know, he does photography himself, I was like, oh, that's not surprising at all. Because a lot of people don't know the compositions that are required to, you know, develop certain things. And he also has a way of describing the process that makes it, like, just that in itself is like very poetic. It's like his way of describing it. Like a spontaneous composition thrills, camera viewer condenses, make the wondrous wide world containable. Propelled by excitement, photographers love to share. Like a fine musical composition, each perfect shot energizes. So like when you get that shot that you're looking for, just, you know, you get pumped about it. So that, like, you can feel his passion in the write, you know. So when you mentioned that, I was like, oh, that makes a whole lot more sense now, because he's actually writing about something he knows about and something that really, really deeply relates to him. And I also like that stanza that you chose, a dark room, dungeon, secret lair, inner sanctum, holy ground, experience, hands, braille, pregnant, filmal. That was also an awesome stanza there. But I think through the lens, scouted moments immortalized, future generations can travel back in time. Behold the alchemy of silver chloride and silver bromide. I think that's also a very important part of the poem, because it shows like the appreciation for those that came before, because like before they had cameras, you know, they had hieroglyphics back in the days, you know, and that was their way of preserving what they saw and things that they saw. And we've come a long way since then, technologically anyways. And he pointed that out, like it was awesome. I really appreciated that, and I always appreciate Eric's work.
Oh, absolutely. And I like that you know, you said, and I have to agree with you, that you can really see that his heart is put into this topic, and that he really relates it to himself. And then also the fact that, you know, both photography and art, I mean, really have come, I mean, just look at how we've come from, you know, paintings in caves, to those hyper-realistic paintings that we have nowadays. So, very cool stuff. All right. Up next, we have Dance by Lawrence67. And did I read the last one? No, you did. Okay, so I will read this one. All right. And it goes like this. Hey, Abbott. What? Dance. I can't. I said dance. I don't know how. I said dance. Pow, pow, pow. I did the boogaloo, a three-step or two, a twist and the hustle, and threw in a meringue for good measure. Who knew I was such a good dancer? Just needed a little motivation. Pow, pow, pow. End poem. And Robert, your thoughts?
I have to step away momentarily. I'm sorry. I'll be right back.
No problem. No problem. All right. Well, I have to say, I thought this was great fun. I do wish Rex had been here to read it, because I do always enjoy when Rex reads Lawrence67's poetry. I think he would have done the voices and the pow, pow, pows, but still it was fun to read. I like how he brings in the different dances. I really like the boogaloo. I did the boogaloo and a three-step or two, a twist and the hustle. And, you know, I like that he put in the pow, pow, pow a couple of times. And, you know, it had some great humor to it, and excellent write, and very well done. So, all right. And I'll go ahead and bring us on to the next write. And thank you very much, Lawrence. Glad you were able to be inspired. And all right. And our next poem is City Life by Dammit Dave. And Robert, are you back with us? Or with me? All right.
Sorry, I'm back.
All right. Well, we are going to go ahead and move on to City Life by Dammit Dave. And go ahead, Robert, and give them read for us.
All right. City Life. The big city life grows on him like a tumor on his soul. More like the big shitty life, if you ask me. He leans forward in his chair and laughs at his own cleverness, taking the drag of his menthol cigarette. He watches the smoke rise as it blends with the smorgasbord of odors, drifting through his second-story apartment window on another busy midtown morning. And as the smoke drifts upward, it swirls and twirls as if the smog to dance. End poem.
Great read, Robert, and excellent write, Dave. I think this is a little different than Dave's usual format, although I have seen a variety of formats from him. It had some clever lines. I like how, like, a lot of times you see four-line stanzas from Dave, which he does very well. But I like with this one how the stanza lines varied. It was a wonderful free. I really like the line, "More like the big shitty life, if you ask me." And great attention to detail. I like how he describes this character and gives him a life of his own, and the city a life. And it isn't just about the imagery, like what you see, but really brings in, like, even like the smells, the odors. You know, he says he watches the smoke rise as it blends with the smorgasbord of odors. I thought the smorgasbord of odors was really clever. And this was a great look at the idea of how, you know, there's so much pollution that builds up with big cities and smog, and until, you know, it really affects the people around. Like, I don't know about your area where you live, but, like, I remember taking a trip and going through there's a town in Indiana that's really known for their factories. Oh, Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana just has the most horrific smells because of the factories that are there. It's a really just intriguing write and a great imagery, powerful lines on the whole idea of pollution and big city life. So very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah, I always liked Dave's work. He did a great job on this one. And I do know about the pollution right now. I mean, I live in the desert, but there's hardly any here. You could actually see the stars and the clouds and the sky and stuff. But if you go down to L.A., you ain't seeing nothing much, really. Like, it's just all messed up down there by comparison to here. I know that there are places, other big cities that are worse, but it's worse than here. In any case, I like this character that he brought out of this picture. Like, this guy was just like because I've been this guy, you know, not necessarily with the cigarette, but I've been sitting there thinking, like, after an argument or thinking of something I should have said, like, yeah, I'm so damn clever, ain't I? You know? Yeah, and it's like, it just kind of gives that relatable piece, like, yeah, I really gave him a what for and this and that. So, I don't know, it pulls you in and makes you see the poem through this person's eyes and perspective and other senses, like the smells, like you mentioned, and the rising of the smoke, and he really sets a tone, say, like, from where, drifting through his second-story apartment window on another busy midtown morning. So just with that little stanza there, you can just, like, you can see the window, and then if you glance outside, you can see the cars and going up and down and people walking in the street. At least I can, you know, like, it's just like this whole environment in motion. So he did a great job in describing it and really pulling us into the poem. So, yeah, thanks for that, Dave.
Absolutely, and great comment. You need to get yourself a bowler hat there, Robert. Like the one in the picture?
I have a, what is it? I don't know what you call those hats, but I have, like, one of those, not necessarily a bowler hat, but it's similar. I don't really wear it often, but my mom gave it to me. So, yeah, I mean, if I could throw up a few poses for people if they want. But
there you go. All All right. Well, up next we have Bright City Lights Keep Me Up at Night by Jenny Hunt, 2017. And Jenny was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud, so here we go.
All I can do is think about you, tossing and turning in this cold, hard bed. For you I'm yearning. Such a sad, scorching summer evening when you are not here by my side to enjoy this miraculous view. Bright city lights keep me up at night. No medication can help me sleep. Please, city, turn off already. I beg, about to weep. I'm losing this endless, depressing fight. Is this what I get for moving in this sleepless city? Isolated, never really seen, wrapped my life around you. Without you, what am I supposed to do? Insomnia never affected me like this. When you disappear, the dire city stinks. No thrill, no pleasure, can't find happiness. This diurnal dame desperately screams as daunting daydreams keep teasing me. Please, baby, come back to me. I am not this woman who usually pleads. In your arms, I am so used to sleeping in. Without you, there is no more me. Here in this dreary, lonely, loud city of nightmares and poems.
Wonderful read and write, Jenny. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. I really like how Jenny puts a lot of emotion into her write, and how with this particular one chosen prompt, she takes this picture of a story and she puts a picture of us, not story, picture of a city and puts the humanity into it, the idea of feeling lost, you know, and I like how it relates to the idea of how there can be different reasons for why it's not easy to fall asleep. Like if you move somewhere, you know, I throughout my life, I've lived from living in the middle of the woods to a small town, to a small town, to a big city. And there always is this time period of adjustment. But I also like how there's the idea of the loneliness and the depression that this woman is feeling, even though she's in this big city. She's lonely because there's this one person she's missing. She's not finding somebody to connect with. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Robert?
Well, what it reminded me of was in Bram Stoker's Dracula, when in the movie I'm talking about, when he said that Mina was the light of all lights. And this kind of reminded me of that. Like, she's in a city filled with lights, she's in a city filled with people, but only this one person that she's interested in, like her comfort or safe zone, or her light lighthouse, so to speak, you know, is the only thing that was able to keep her distracted and comfortable and secure. And when you're out in that area that you're not really familiar with all by yourself, and then even if you were in a smaller area and you don't have that person to comfort you, it's going to be pretty bad. And then, but moving to like a big city and then with the absence of your one person of solace, it amplifies things and makes it like a horrific experience, or it can be anyways. And in the, you know, throughout this poem, she, you know, reiterated that, like, you know, I she needed them. Like, is this what I get from moving to this sleepless city, isolated, never really seen, wrapped my life around you, without you, what am I supposed to do, you know? And insomnia never affected me like this. When you disappear, the dire city stinks. So with this person there, they didn't, the city was not necessarily as bad, but without them, She sees the entire city for what it is, and all the senses are awakened because they don't have that protection or that distraction or the, you know, the comfort to be able to make it through. And this is deeply humanitarian piece, and I'm glad she shared it with us. And yeah, she did a great job with SoundCloud. I know she recently started doing them, so keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I really like when people help me to see a poem in a new way. Like, I hadn't even thought about Bram Stoker's Dracula. And when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, that does connect with that. So really cool observations there. Thank you. And excellent write by Jenny. All right, let's see what we have next. All right, we have City Life by S. Sharp. And Scott was also nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
City Life. The sun shades everything but the vibrancy of the streets. Cars hum and huff in the haze they create. Crazy kids drive by in their Nissan nutsack, music blaring. They sing at me, smiling. Their teeth look just like piano keys. Horns blare in the distance where patience wanders off a sidewalk into the street. Amongst cabbies and delivery drivers, one foot on the gas pedal and the other on top of that foot. A homeless woman pushes her basket, head down, hunched over, dragging passion like a shadow somewhere behind her. The clock tower strikes five. All chaos ensues. Friday night, lines of cars, stoplights, crosswalks filled like a shotgun blast into the suburbs, killing everything but the silence.
Great read and write, Scott. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, sorry about reposting it because I didn't see that you posted it. It wasn't showing up. But yeah, this for some reason I got like a Bukowski-esque type feel from this. It seemed very like how is it? What's the word? Like brash, just very just straightforward and also like it's kinda like a brutal and raw in a way. Like, for example, I love the part where he says, crazy kids drive by in their Nissan nutsack. Like, he doesn't even, like the way that that the cars are nowadays, and, you know, they just look terrible. And he didn't, he aptly described what they kind of look like, some of them. And, but also, the part that I liked a lot was horns blare in the distance where patience wanders off a sidewalk into the street amidst cabbies and delivery drivers, one foot on the gas pedal and the other on top, one on top of that foot. So it was like pedal to the metal hardcore, you know, just a, like fast city life all around. And then there's also the bleakness, you know, with the homeless woman hunched over, pushing her basket, dragging passion like a shadow somewhere behind her. Like that is the, like that was genius right there. I love the way he that stands there in particular because of that dragging passion like a shadow somewhere behind her, because, you know, her best days are behind her type of thing, you know, and she doesn't have that light in her anymore, and she's just living. Well, she's just alive, and he encapsulated the city life perfectly, especially nowadays. You know, like the way things are so fast and moving everywhere, and nobody cares about anybody else, and it's just always fast, 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 move, 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 go, 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 and that's the brutal reality of it, and he captured that very well.
He really did, and yeah, that is, I mean, even in smaller towns, but especially bigger cities, it is really all go, 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 and I like how he has such great attention to detail and brings the people of the city into this, right? The crazy kids, and I too had to get a laugh out of that, crazy kids drive by in their Nissan nutsack. And even that he brings in the cabbies and the delivery drivers, and, you know, because they're just, and every person in here, what I think works really well is every person in here adds a touch of humanity to the right, and yet there, no one is given a name. They're all very ominous, very, you know, like generic type representations of people that you would find in a city, the cabbies, the delivery drivers, the crazy kids, the homeless woman. And I like how at the end where it says the clock tower strikes five and all chaos ensues. Like, you know, that's the point. Everybody gets out of work and there's the traffic jams and everybody's trying to get home quickly, but it just doesn't happen. So, yeah, just a wonderful description of big city life and all the chaos within it. So very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right, we have Hopeful Dystopia, which I'll post right now, which is Hopeful Dystopias by Ben Hart. And, okay, who was the last one to read before we did? It was you. Okay, so I will read this one. All right. Usually he takes midnight confessions in the corner booth of his neon diocese. But after the third round of patience, his mind has gone wandering, vestiges of old depression, and his eyes are shooting up and down St. Peter Street, that forgetful fisherman casting fish that could feed a village back into the sea of sin for a shilling, and looking out across the urban abyss. Had he stood at Gethsemane, would he have been willing to take Iscariot's kiss, return to his body, dragged back across a sidewalk, drenched, card still in his hand, finding opposite him the shell of an old friend, entrenched in fall leather bench, stirring a cup of tepid chamomile tea, mourning the stem that bled the heat. Forgive me, Father, I didn't mean to be a bother, but I had a dream about you and me kissing in a garden. Sometimes I lie awake at night thinking if God was a gangster, would pastors with razor blade crucifixes go around giving Glaswegian smiles to those behind on their prayers? Not every pair of eyes are the entrance of something that was bold of us to call a temple, free to move from cell to cell, but if you don't sit still, you can keep pretending it's not hell. You had shaved your head since we last met, but weren't looking gaunt. Though you had tattooed a bullseye over your ear and the words straight shot in very bold font. And I said, it's so good to see you, my dear, but you said it was not, and there was something you wanted. You wanted your bruises back, the ones my numbing hands had fought to earn, and in return you said you'd love me again. If humanity was opposed to being the antidote of the divine apathy, then I don't think that's all she wrote. I still have hope. My heart still beats. The funniest thing, today I saw a priest kissing God in the street. End poem. I have to say, I got caught off guard. I'm so used to Ben's poems being a little bit longer that I did not realize I was that close to the end. So, but wonderful, right? And your thoughts, Robert?
Yeah. Well, that's because it flowed, like one thought flowed into the other very seamlessly, you know, like it didn't seem like as long of a ride as it was, and it seemed like it could have gone longer. So, yeah, that's quite the conundrum. But I thought this was a very artistic piece describing the humanity, because even, you know, priests are still people, you know. This person seemed to be struggling with their maybe with their faith or you know, just shutting down and regressing back to the old sinner, so to speak. I like how he went, that forgetful fisherman casting fish that could feed a village back into the seas of sin for a shilling, and looking out across the urban abyss, he stood at Gethsemane. Would he have been willing to take Iscariot's kiss? You know, there keeps being this mention of a kiss, and you know, a lot of people was the homosexuality being a sin, and it was kind of strewn throughout here. Like, and I also like sometimes I lie awake at night thinking if God was a gangster with pastors with razor blade crucifixes go around giving Glaswegian smiles to those behind on their prayers. Kind of like, it kind of threw a little bit of humor in there, but it's also like a sadistic humor of sorts. Like, as you can see the priest grinning, like, hey, you're behind in your prayers, you know, and just wielding their little crucifix that they're going to cut you with. And that's an interesting way, I think. It's very creative because he took me there. Like, with that stanza, when he mentioned all that, I was watching it unfold. And I thought that was awesome. And just the entire poem was great. Like, the references where he said, let's see. Oh, you wanted your bruises back, the ones my numbing hands had fought to earn. And in return, you said you'd love me again. So in this part, I'm wondering if he's talking about himself or if he's talking about like a god of sorts. Like, you know, it kind of, to me, it seems open to interpretation, but it seems like a person is just really struggling with themselves and their beliefs. And I thought it was a great representation of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Great observation. And I have to agree with you that one part is definitely open to interpretation. Like, it could be about the relationship with God or about the relationship with themselves or even another person. I definitely think it's a layered right. I too, really like the part about the Glaswegian smiles and the preachers being gangsters. You know, I felt like there was this kind of struggle with the oftentimes hypocrisy of religion, how it, you know, it kind of spoke to me the idea of putting on a show, but not really helping those who truly need help. You know, and I like the imagery and metaphors in this. I really like even the small details, like stirring a cup of tepid chamomile tea. It feels like, because tepid chamomile tea to me sounds so bland. It feels like, you know, the idea of not living life to the fullest or to your potential, but rather, you know, as you had mentioned in another poem earlier, just being stagnant. You know, so excellent, thought-provoking, right, and very well done. All right, let's see what we have next. All right, we have On the Edge by Silent Tree. And Robert, can you give that a read for us? Oops, that poem has been deleted.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess no problem. That happens. All right, let's see here. All right. Then who is after that? Xylophonic Blues is usually pretty long, but let me check. Oh, that's not too bad. All right, I'll go for that one then. This will probably be our last poem for the night. And all right, our last poem for the night, and the rest will be carried over to Tuesday's After Midnight show, is New York Life by Xylophonic Blues. And go ahead, Robert, and give that a read for us, please.
All right. New York life. Train ramps looked out over the street. Rail bumps staring into the void. People's lives below. Streets, monochrome heartbeats as the headlights danced off puddles. Engineered, envisioned skyscrapers, most distant outline. Tunnels with headlamps, wrenching dotted randomly. Light, little lights that shone from the windows. Veins and metro capillaries upon station's ventricle. Central Park sparrows gather as the turnstiles pulse. Lungs pushing air in and out, feeding the passengers throughout to the stairs. Avenues amassing sweat, subterranean blood cells, tenor men threaded in Friday night's tweed, jazz ensemble, stray cats trapeze from windowsills. Model iron, fire escapes, pulling us up before orange sunrise. East River bone crushing split the metro levee. Dusk falls over the far, catching notes behind closed Bronx doors. Bronze skin, little India sing to your Chelsea boys. Harlem survivors paint the Hudson a new flag color. Lady Liberty calls the blue note. Yellow cab patched the gushing lip with azure blue. Little Italy immigrant song tied around her ring finger. Past is present, Irish green, rusted windswept beams. Brooklyn bridge fingers bled, black and white ivory keys. Jaw-breaking fist-building union men. The darkness covers potholes of coups. Lamb followed by a cappuccino as I walk. Merrill's brick pavements. Broadway artery sweats subterranean blues. Restaurant bustles with people. Waiters' fingers raw from climbing their spine. Burnishing shins crammed against stitched sole. Night lamp casts her halo upon spiraling dragonfly clocks. Rooftops overlook dandelion. Ground zero. Elements become midnight's stepstone flight. Eyebrows unguarded. High wire tension shocks. Rock wall stairs. Mirror edge train. Blurs over the electric. The stranger at the gate walks in skyscraper shadows. Dewdrops upon rain sincerely. New York life loves once again. End poem.
Great read, Robert. I really have to say, I really enjoy and appreciate how Xylophonic Blues uses imagery and scatters his lines so that there's a sense of movement with his stanzas. I like that this one didn't just focus on the darker side of New York. I'm sure a lot of people who live in New York can definitely see this particular New York. He mentions a lot of well-known areas, you know, the engineers and vision skyscrapers, Central Park, the jazz ensembles, the model iron, you know, fire escapes, East River Bone, you know, so much. I mean, all the way through, you know, Little India, Harlem survivors. I mean, it's like he goes through the different parts of New York and the history of New York and all the different people that have emerged from it. So amazing write and very well done. And Robert, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really appreciated the grasp in describing things like streets, monochrome, heartbeat as the headlights danced off puddles. I really like that, the headlights dancing off the puddles. I thought that was a very ingenious way of putting that. And then engineers envision skyscrapers, like how you mentioned, and then lungs pushing air in and out, feed the passengers throughout the stairs. Just all around, it was just a great description of and it captures my mind and really took me to the area. So yeah, very well done.
Absolutely, and great show tonight. Thank you, Robert, for being here. I really appreciate it. Thank you to Jenny, who was hanging on the board Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, was listening while we were on live, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And have a good night, everyone.